Before we dive into this episode, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please take a second to leave a review. Reviews help boost the show so that others struggling in a toxic workplace can find it. You can also go to my website, toxicworkplacepodcast.com, to send me a message, or if you want to be a guest on the show, you can fill out a submission request. Your story will be completely anonymous. All names are changed to protect the employee and the employer. I've also recently added a toxic workplace quiz where you can answer questions about your current situation, maybe your past situation, and see where it falls on the toxicity scale. Go to toxicworkplacepodcast.com.
I had just moved to a new state and I was still really kind of at the beginning of my career, and I had already started in a public school. I grew up in public schools as well. So that's really all I ever knew.
This is Chelsea. Chelsea works in education as a teacher. With the move to a new state, she was hopeful to find a job opportunity that would get her career on the right track.
And so when I moved, it was actually my partner had a colleague who knew that I had not yet found a job and had said, hey, I heard about this really small school that's actually looking for somebody with your type of experience. You should check them out. I had never considered working in a private school. Definitely my partner was kind of giving me that like, hey, you should really put yourself out there. You know, I got my materials together and applied. The process to just get into the interview was really smooth. It went so smoothly. Sometimes after I was hired, I questioned if anybody else even applied.
During the interview, Chelsea didn't detect any red flags. Despite her initial concerns about joining a private school, the seamless flow of the interview convinced her that the job was a perfect match. However, eventually she would come to realize that the next decade of her career would be characterized by disorganization, a lack of clear direction, and frequent changes of toxic leadership within the organization. My name's Carly, and this is Toxic Workplace, a podcast that gives a platform to those who have survived highly toxic work experiences, only to come out with newfound wisdom and a renewed sense of self. A toxic workplace is more than just the daily grind. It's a soul-crushing experience that will chip away at your sanity until you're about to lose your mind. It's an abusive relationship that's hard to leave. And the longer you stay, the more you lose sight of who you set out to be.
My class that year had 3 or 4 other teachers who became long timers like me. We were like the last quote unquote class to do that. There was never a cohort of teachers brought in at the same time that all stayed as long as we did. They had a really good mentor teacher program where I felt taken care of and supported and provided with the training that I was going to need. They had a really good onboarding process, but things did change once I got there. So the 2 team leaders that interviewed with me, I was under the impression that I was going to be working directly with them. One of them in particular was going to be my direct supervisor, and I had hit it off with them, so I was looking forward to it. Once I got there, so this was somewhere between 6 and 10 weeks from the time that I was hired until I actually reported, and my supervisor changed. The whole team that I had been hired to be on, along with the supervisor, was completely different. They were separating out from kind of being one team under one roof to being 2 teams under 2 roofs. The school was K-12. And so this was the split between like K through 7th grade and then 8th grade and up. So I had been hired to be in the upper grades and was put down on the lower grade. So then it becomes like an upper school and a lower school. We were just in 2 different buildings. So the team that I went on was not what I was expecting. The bulk of my actual experience was with the other team. That was definitely my comfort zone. That's what I talked about in my interview. My new supervisor, though, this was this person's very first year in this level of a leadership position. And we were roughly about the same age, and they were not willing to give themselves or anybody else a break because it was their first year. They didn't allow themselves a learning curve, so they didn't allow anybody else a learning curve either. There was also just some personality things from the very beginning. This person made some jokes that I would consider like slightly racist. Like, if you think this joke is funny to me right now, oh boy, like we're in for something. What I learned is really probably should be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Just a little bit more cutthroat, which was not the rest of the vibe there either. The other team leader that I had interviewed with, her and I did vibe. This person had been in this role for a long time. And every time I would run into her in the hall, especially before a team meeting where I would have to report to the other team for an entire year, she'd say to me, oh gosh, I don't understand why they put you on that team. I really wish you were in on my team. You were so much better suited for my team. And I'd say, thanks. You know, that's really helpful, but...
Assigning an employee to a role that doesn't align with their strengths is counterproductive as it diminishes their efficiency and job satisfaction. This mismatch can lead to decreased productivity, heightened stress, and increased turnover, resulting in additional costs for their organization in the long run. So even though this organization was trying to save a few bucks by stretching Chelsea and other teachers past their comfort zones, it ultimately undermined the overall organizational performance and hindered growth opportunities.
In this organization, because it is so small and it's so specialized, everybody wears a lot of different hats. What made it even more frustrating is that particular hat that they had me put on was something that was not part of my background, which is okay for that organization. You don't have to have every single credential, but I felt like I was put in a place with our student who needed somebody with more experience than what I had. Now, you know, you're in a rock and a hard place when you really need a job and want a job, but then you're going to say, but don't put me in this role that I'm not actually qualified for, knowing that they know that. They know what they're doing too. And so I had to try to be my best at it, but it was in terms of that part of my job and my job responsibilities, to me, it came down about fourth or fifth ranking on my hierarchy of job responsibilities and roles. So it seemed that everybody else that I worked with got that. Like the other supervisor for the other team, you know, she was like, I know that that's really not your background and your specialty. But my actual supervisor was holding me just as accountable as all of the other teachers in those places. And most of those other teachers did have the qualifications for that particular part of the role. My supervisor was like, I'm going to disregard the fact that I know and you know and everybody knows that you're not qualified for this particular aspect of your role, but I am still going to evaluate you just like I would for everybody. There would be so many things that I would be like, I didn't even know to ask that question. Like, that's how far behind I am. I didn't even know that that was a question to ask.
From the outset of her time at this school, Chelsea found herself adrift in terms of professional guidance. The prevailing attitude seemed to be sink or swim, where struggling, even if you lacked the necessary skills, was counted against you during formal evaluations. Determined to excel despite the challenges, Chelsea invested extensive effort and time to compensate for her lack of experience in the roles that were thrust upon her. The absence of support from others created frustration as she navigated the daunting task of catching up without a lifeline.
The next year I was placed on the other team. The kind of disappointing thing is that the person who had been a leader of that team, that person who interviewed me, was retiring. So I was never going to realize the dream of actually working under her. But then that led to change-ups and all sorts of new leadership. The main leader of the organization left. So there was some gaps that needed to be filled, and they were going to fill them from within and internally. So then I did go to a new supervisor. I went to another team. I was much more holistically accepted on the other team because just my strengths just really were more with working with students, you know, with older students. Then the person who became the leader of my new team had also been a longtime employee. This was this person's first year in an actual supervisory role while they had been in leadership. This person took a complete 180 approach. This person declined to evaluate anybody that they supervised because they claimed that they had not done a good job in their first year. Therefore, they could not evaluate anyone else. So I went from getting over feedback on things that I really wasn't even qualified to do to getting zero feedback. That's when things really started to kind of fall apart culturally.
Organizations that struggle to maintain strong, consistent leadership will start to see cracks throughout the organization. When leadership frequently turns over, it creates inconsistencies and a lack of direction among the organization, which leaves room for self-directed initiatives, rule interpretation, and lack of authority, which transpires into a dysfunctional environment, which was what was happening at Chelsea School.
In this line of work, it really is about being collaborative. It is about being team players together. It is about showing through leadership and through compassion. I mean, that's what the whole spirit of this field is about. So kind of part of what was going on through year one and year two is the person that I replaced remained in the organization, worked in the leadership, but did not supervise me or anything. But because they had had that role for so many years, I would often go to them with questions, simple questions that you would just ask any colleague. And that person from the very beginning would say things to me like, "That's not my job anymore. That's yours. You need to figure it out." And I was like, "Yeah, like I get it. I will do what I want. But like, I really need to know how you did this. I just need you to show me once. And then after that, yeah, that's fine. I get it. Like, I'm not asking you to do it for me." And there was other questions about my job that I could ask anybody. And I would ask those other people. But this was the only person who had the insight to my job because it was an exceptional position. So there was only one other person who knew anything about the inner workings of my job. And it was this person who was still in the building, which I thought was fantastic. It was like I would hear that this is the way that they were treating everybody. And this person wasn't held accountable. And so I got to a point where I stopped asking for help because I was like, okay, I don't need to put myself through that. And so then I would get, "Why'd you do it like that? You know, I used to do it like this," and would use me as a punching bag in front of people. And so as soon as there was another person in the room, it was all about, "Well, you know, when I had that role, I used to do this and I used to do that." It would be in front of my colleagues. It would be in front of students. That went on for a few years. And, you know, I would get to the point where I would come home and I would be in tears and I could only obsessively talk about these experiences that I would have throughout the day. And my partner would be like, you know, I mean, very sympathetic, but also like, "Oh my God, like, do you have anything else to talk about?" And then I started to go like, how am I feeding into this? Because I joke around a lot, joking, teasing, you know, stuff like that. Maybe this person thinks that this is how we get along. Maybe this person actually thinks this is our rapport and I've done a bad job of kind of establishing my boundaries. So I needed a new approach. I went to my supervisor about this in my second year, because I was assigned a duty that was way, way far out of what I was hired to do and had been vocal about it from the interview process. Like, "I can't do this. I don't know how to do it. If it needs to be done, you need to hire somebody else." And because of like the backpedaling of the person that I replaced, they unloaded a duty on me. Think of it like if I was the PE teacher and I had been asked to coach a team during the day and then not get paid a stipend for it because I was already the PE teacher. Like, it's that kind of responsibility where, like, if anybody else had had this duty, they would have been paid for it. but it was like kind of considered to be part of my like day-to-day duties. And so I would not be receiving extra. And so this had been a bubbling issue where I had gone to my supervisor. And again, this was another thing that this, the person whose role I had taken pawned off on me. And when I would ask this person for help, this person would say, nobody trained me on it. I don't need to train you on it. So I went to my supervisor, who was not the supervisor of this person. They were more lateral to each other. And I was like, this is really just plain rude. You've already tasked me with something that I told you I'm not qualified to do. I'm having to spend a ton of extra hours doing it. Y'all, for some reason, think that you don't need to pay me for it. And then on top of that, I have zero support. So now I'm spending even more time because I have to teach myself from scratch. And my supervisor is like, hey, I get it. That person's a real jerk. Always has been, always will be, but ain't nothing I can do about it. But like, yeah, I know he's a real jerk, huh? And so at this time too, the principal, if you will, was also new in my second year. So I also got a new principal. And this person was great. She had a real open door for everybody. I felt very heard when I eventually went all the way up to this person. But with the same line of, yeah, I know. I hear this a lot about that person. I hear a lot about them being a jerk. It was kind of like a, that's just them.
When employees aren't held accountable by leadership for their poor actions or lack of contributions, it's a green light from the top that their behavior is okay. In this case, the leaders of the school are aware of Chelsea's colleagues' rude, demeaning behavior, and they fail to correct it by ignoring it. The message they're sending is that this sort of behavior is tolerated and that Chelsea just needs to deal with it, which is a losing situation for everyone involved. Ultimately, this lack of accountability erodes trust and creates an environment where negativity thrives, impacting not only the individuals like Chelsea, but the entire organization. But Chelsea tells me that despite the toxic environment, leaving was never an option. She's dedicated and loyal to her employer, and she was willing to push through for the long haul, which eventually pushed her into a leadership position.
I continue to kind of build up my reputation and my standing within the organization, and I find myself in the leadership position after a few more years. When I look back on it, and when you look back at the red flags, I think that there's probably a little bit of a red flag that I was put in the position. But I know from being in on a lot of interviews after I got that job is that I was the cheapest person. That's what I learned. That's the whole game, is who's going to do it for the least amount of money. I cannot tell you how many people we would just turn away flat when they were like, yeah, but can I just get 3,000 more, 5,000 more? Sometimes it would be like, well, you just came to the wrong place if you're asking for that much, right? You know, there's a line. And what I learned from being on the other side, it was offensive too. Like, who does that person even think they are asking for more money? And that was a little bit more of the meat that I found out, you know, where it would be like, don't talk about benefits early on. Or like if they ask, like kind of be a little evasive about it. And it was really something that they did not want to talk about until you had signed a contract. Then the person who became the new main leader of the organization, that ultimately was how they got into that position as well, is they were willing to take the least amount of money. The other people turned it down before this person was offered because they would not take it for the money.
When an organization bases their hiring decisions on the lowest price tag, they don't hire based on candidates best suited for the role. This leads to poor hiring decisions where candidates do not meet the needs of the organization. When the needs of the organization aren't met, it can result in decreased productivity, increased turnover rates, and ultimately hindered growth and success. Additionally, it can create a ripple effect, affecting team dynamics, employee morale, and overall organizational culture, further exacerbating the challenges faced by the organization, which builds over time. This is what Chelsea's organization was experiencing. The next person on deck for the main leadership position at this organization was Chelsea's friend, Stacy. As Chelsea mentioned, Stacy got the role because she was the only one willing to take it for the low salary point. Stacy had no experience as a teacher inside the classroom, which led to a great lack of insight on her part.
But COVID happened pretty late in the school year, so it felt like a good amount of time had gone with this brand new leadership team. This is almost like a top to bottom scrape of new leadership at this point in time. A lot of kind of fresh ideas. Stacy was somebody I had formed a really close relationship with. I was going through the process essentially with her in real time, and I didn't think that our friendship would survive it. And I was right, because I knew how they operated behind closed doors. And when I became on the outside, I was like, I know exactly what is happening. Like, you know, I have to question myself sometimes, like, how much was I a participant in that? Because, like, I had been on the other side. I thought that when we would talk very harshly about somebody, like in a very constructive way, like I didn't think it was just a gossip session. I thought it was to actually put some improvement in place. Like I thought that it was more constructive than just gossiping. You know, I had to take a step back once I started to see that this was really more about kind of gossiping and tearing people down than being constructive, that I no longer also wanted to be a participant. And that's where I got on the outside. But, you know, when Stacy first took her new leadership role, took it super seriously, but the skill set that was lacking, Stacy had zero experience actually being an educator, which I felt like was pretty important for somebody who was leading an educational program to weigh in heavily on matters of education or classroom management or, you know, things like that. Like, you really have to have done it. Stacy was also self-effacing about that. You know, I'm the only person who's never actually taught a full classroom. But what I learned, she had such an ego, such an inflated sense of self, that those barriers no longer mattered. She could have an equal footing in opinions on the goings-on in the classroom or curriculum matters, just like everybody else, which was not really necessary for that role. So then that's micromanaging. We've got a hand in everything where you don't actually even need to have your hand in it. Even before COVID, Stacy took on such a high level of responsibility for every aspect of everything that happened within the building that it really bordered on martyrdom. You couldn't be responsible for everything in the building. So things were going to go wrong. Bad decisions were going to be made, but everything was an arrow on Stacy. I'll give you an example. There was an incident where there was a team leader leading her team. And so Stacy comes in and says, I'm available for the next 15 minutes. Can I help you, you know, move those supplies from there to there or whatever? And the team leader is like, no, actually, you know, I got it. Don't worry about it. And so Stacy goes and moves the boxes from one room to the other, even when she's been told not to. And then we'll go back to the other members of the team. Well, you know, Jan over there wasn't able to get that done. So, you know, I had to go over there and do it. That's just a small one, but it was that kind of thing. That kind of became the thing that we all knew was happening to us too. So it's like you can even see it coming at you, where Stacy would come and try to offer up help on a situation. And you would either say, no, I don't need your help, because you were terrified at, you know, her getting involved and fucking it up, to what is the story that she's going to actually tell about what happened here? So through COVID too, this is when, you know, she became a self-appointed expert on COVID and did involve herself a lot in understanding everything that was going on, but would wake up at 5 a.m. to make sure that she'd read all the latest articles hot off the press. She became the expert because she was insecure, but she would also challenge you to find out what you would do because she was insecure. It was just always this challenge to see if you knew as much and if you were going to give the right answer. And God forbid if you gave a better answer, because that would really throw shit. It consumed her. Now, because I knew her pretty well, like that's where her anxiety lives too. So like part of alleviating her anxiety would be to become the quote unquote expert on it, but also was a little bit of a martyr. So when there was pushback, then it's like, woe is me. I'm not the expert on this. I just like, I didn't know that I was signing on to this job that was going to become this much more, which we all felt like that. I think everybody who, especially people who were trying to make decisions for the health and safety of other people, it very much felt like, this is not what I signed on for. She took it to a whole nother level of, oh my God, I'm so oppressed because like this is happening to me. And that's when things kind of took a turn. Like I cooled off a lot about how I felt about the place, because there was kind of like taking a stand and creating a policy. And then when it was too hard to enforce, it was like, well, let's just not do that anymore. But if we have a policy in place and we just wrote the policy, why would we not enforce it? Like, especially when you're working with kids, that's the worst vibe to give, that like, policies really aren't that important when they become annoying. And to me, again, because of the nature of being in a school setting, like you've got that refresh. Let's rewrite the policy this summer. Like it's fine. We can get rid of it and just not include it for next year, but we can't have it on the books and not do it right now. My role was really to kind of be the enforcer of the structure. And so for me, I was like, I don't know what's important anymore. Really, is like, if we're that easy to just write something up, then I no longer know what's important. Like, I no longer know where I stand.
Having policies and procedures in place that are consistently followed takes the guesswork out of expectations. Chelsea's organization had seen multiple leadership and policy changes, and at this point, no one was sure what rules to follow or how pertinent the rules were. This ambiguity led to confusion and frustration among the staff, which further leads to a disrespect for the leadership for not enforcing a level of consistent authority. For Chelsea, her work frustrations were coupled by the building stress and anxiety of her personal life as she navigated through the tribulations of her ailing parents.
Right at this time, right? So I get the new job in leadership. I have my second child, and both of my parents get terminal diagnosis within about 6 months. And then COVID happened. I didn't live near my parents, and I didn't get to see them anymore because you couldn't travel or anything. And so things literally got like exponentially more intense in my life. You know, no sleep, two kids, new job. And now I'm the one who was very pregnant and decided to apply for this job. So it's not like it happened to me. But it became a lot very, very quickly, and it became very emotionally taxing. It was so much. And, you know, even like kind of once COVID stopped becoming so much of an issue, that's when my parents' health issues really became, I mean, it's an experience that you can't prepare for, to have both of your parents be sick, and they're supposed to, you thought that they were going to take care of each other, but they can't even take care of themselves anymore. You know, my work days were getting interrupted a lot by desperate phone calls from my parents. And so like my brain was like flipping all day long. I mean, those are my personal issues, right? Like nobody did that to me, like nothing's happening. But as that progressed, just like I was burning at all ends of it, that's when we had a really toxic employee. From the beginning, I was opposed to the hiring of this person because they actually were the parent of a child within our organization, but they were hired. And so when they first came on, without a doubt, this person, and this person is Steven. So Steven comes on and is an enthusiastic, passionate educator in their field. And I will say that about them to this day. Highly knowledgeable, highly passionate, gets you going when they start talking about their interests. But over time, it became just a loud guy, a rude guy, a guy who wants to mansplain, race-splain, culture-splain, kids-splain, you know, and was becoming the loudest voice in the room all the time. But it wasn't like, man, he's got some really good things to say. It's just drivel. And it's just posturing, and would stand up in a meeting and, you know, have a monologue about what we should do or how we should do it, or send emails, you know, that you had to like scroll to read, you know, about how we should be doing things better, but then was 0% interested in actually following through with anything or implementing anything. It was like, well, you just take it or leave it. Like, you don't, I mean, I just was thinking about it. So I just wanted to share it. And it's like, okay. All right, guy. I mean, I have to just look at myself and go, like, I am a little bit rigid, but like there is a certain amount of decorum that I expect in my workplace, because that's what I'm doing and all of my other colleagues are doing. We're all behaving with a decorum of respect and consideration and teamwork and collaboration. And then we've got this one person who makes the entire day about them. Doesn't prepare for any of the team materials, is not delivering that aspect of the program, that content to their students in any reliable or predictable way, openly flaunts that, you know, being an educator, like you need to be responsible. You need to have a structure. Your students need to know what to expect. Like those are just three of the minimums. And this person was like, oh, you know, like my wife gave up on trying to organize me a long time ago. I'm like, I'm going to overlook the sexist part of that and just say like, no, you've got to get organized. Like, that's just essential. That's just, I mean, it was a non-negotiable.
It only takes just one toxic employee to taint a workplace. Stephen had almost no self-awareness as to how his words or actions were affecting others. But the bigger problem here was that no one was saying or doing anything about it. By not saying anything, the toxicity transpired and became progressively worse.
I think it was pretty clear that the guy was drinking a lot. And so then these kind of afternoon, evening, late night, long rambling emails would start. And then it would kind of end with, basically, I don't see a therapist, so this is how I'm getting out my thoughts and feelings after, you know, like a scroll email that would be sent to multiple team members. Imagine like I'm going through this with my parents. There was a time where every single day I would get news or an update from my parents or one of my siblings that I'd be like, oh my God, this is it. This is the most awful day. And then the next day there would still be new news. And so that was a lot of what I was dealing with in my off hours. But what I was also trying to filter were messages and emails from this guy whenever a thought entered his head. Then like the chat that was supposed to be quiet was now like busting up because he throws in a rant like, oh, what's the name of our insurance provider? I'm at the emergency room. Like, I'm bro, like this is not a group chat. I went to my team members and they're like, oh yeah, that, oh my God. Yeah. Stephen sent that other email. Like, oh yeah, that's so annoying. I can't believe he does that. And I was like, well, can we like officially say stop? Like, I don't know about you guys, but like when somebody sends me an email as a member of the leadership team, I feel obliged to read its entire content. I don't know where the nugget is. I don't know where then maybe this really important piece that I needed to know about a student or a parent or whatever, like, I don't know where it's hidden. And it was really like, you know, that's just how he is. What are we just going to start like sending rules about like what time you can send an email to people? And I was like, for one, we have schedules end, but like, okay, if we don't want to teach people how to do a schedule, send out an email. But nobody else does this. How about we just talk to him and just tell him to stop? We don't have to create more new rules. This doesn't maybe sound like isolated, like that big of a deal, but like this is also like years into like death by a thousand paper cuts. This is not just like a lonely reaction to COVID. The guy has gone off the deep end. So I started to get labeled as this like dramatic, but like, oh, Chelsea's always going to do it by the book. Just never can veer from the script. Isn't she so rigid? Isn't she harshing the buzz on this place? Instead of like, no, I want everybody here to feel included and to be, you know, part of the program. This person is creating a hostile and toxic environment. So I did respond to Steven and say, hey, man, you know, I've got a lot of things that I'm going with. And we were like a family there. So I had spoken to him, like he knew what was going on with my parents, you know, with the health issues, more or less. I mean, you know, and so I'm like, there's a lot of days where I'm getting, you know, test results from my dad from his latest scan and, you know, like new medication update report from my mom. When I'm not at school, any communication that you send my way has to be pertinent to school related business. It just has to. I cannot receive any communication from you on any other topics. And he was cool about it at first because also nothing offended him. Like you could never hurt his feelings either. That really only was a stopgap measure. Like it worked for a little while until it didn't work anymore. Things came to a head when, and you know, I would assume that this was the action of somebody under the influence of substances, but he sent a school-wide email that included all or some members of our board accusing members of leadership of hacking into his email account. Well, he actually was hacked into our IT manager's account. The guy could fuck things up and you don't even know how he did it. Like, you're like, how did you even do that? But because he had logged himself into another account accidentally, he could not understand how the account was working. Therefore, he thought that members of the leadership team were the ones who were indeed hacking him and wanted to share with the entire organization what the leadership team was doing to everybody. And there were many email exchanges where board members and higher levels of the leadership team were like, Steven, no, like you're sending me screenshots of your account. Please look at the upper right corner. You're going to see like you're not signed into it. Nobody's hacking you. And he sent like 7 emails to the team, continuing into this meta loop of confusion, seeing into a black hole. This is a person who at this point was already unhinged. And, you know, had a meeting with Stacy where she was hoping to just clear it out for him. Which I was like, oh my God, just fucking fire him. Like, what else do we need? He was already on an action plan. Like, he had already been told, don't email people things. Don't use social media and talk about our organization. Do not cross these boundaries. Like, he had already been told that. So I was like, bye-bye. I was ready for him to be done. Then the following morning, when he had a meeting with the leader of the organization, he still hadn't figured out that he was wrong about his accusations and came in and continued to berate the leader of the organization, accusing her of hacking into his emails. He didn't even back down. So he didn't even walk in with an apology. So then he was put on a really strict action plan. What was told to me and what I believe to be true was that we were going to fire this person because we didn't have to make anything up. This was not a conspiracy. This was like, just let the guy do it to himself. And then he would do it. And then it would be, he would be given another chance. What I was told was that there was a board member who was actually blocking any further punitive consequences and protecting this person's job. The best that I could understand was that this board member had a child who had been friends with his child and were social outside of school. We had students who couldn't be in his classroom because it smelled funky, that it was so cluttered and disorganized that it was too distracting between the smell and the disorganization for students to even be in the room. I've never worked with a teacher who would be allowed to not have students be in that classroom because the student objected to cleanliness of the space. But remember that supervisor that I told you about that I had that couldn't evaluate anybody because they did such a poor job? That was the supervisor this whole time. That person got themselves into this whole pit of, like, I didn't do a good job at outlining my expectations and documenting from the beginning. So now it's all off the track because so many egregious behaviors had been allowed with, like, you do that one more time. She had done a horrible job of documenting and following through that it left. Now we had a new person in a supervisory position, left them very much with their hands tied because now it's like, oh, well, now that's over the line. Well, remember that other thing that he did that wasn't over the line? How does this now cross the line? It got messy. And my mental health was reaching a breaking point. And so what ultimately was the break was that he had been out sick for a time. And that's its own story too. But I had been the one who was in the classroom most of the time while he was out covering his lesson plans and stuff, which weren't great. So I was on the front line of all of his stuff. And so I was paying attention to what he was posting. And I knew that he was returning to school. And I had already been fielding a lot of students coming to me. I'm confused because Stephen had, you know, said that I didn't turn in this thing. I was really managing his students at the same time. And so I was trying to be proactive about paying attention to what was going on in the class because he had been out for a while. Well, I saw that he had posted something in his learning platform that was for the students that the content was not appropriate for the level of students. It was content that was not related to the class. And it talked about heavy issues like rape. Rape is a war crime without any consultation from the members of the leadership team. If it was like, this is a really important topic that we really talk about, but like, how do I approach this? We don't know the background of all of our students and like what kind of trauma experiences they have had. None of that was taken into consideration. It was like a 5-point just discussion question with heavy, heavy material. And so I flagged it and I sent it to some other members of the leadership team. And I was like, I can't with him anymore. I can't. This is too much. I'm already trying to like work with these students that are in there who are being impacted by some reckless and careless things that are going on in this classroom. This is too much. And so my supervisor was on board with me. But Stacy, the head of our organization who has no background in education, was like, I don't see what the problem is. Repost it. Let them teach it. So it was at this time that the calls from my parents are increasing. The calls from my siblings are increasing. It was just such a hard time to kind of understand what to do with my parents. And so I made a decision that day in the middle of the day when I found out that he was not going to be held accountable for that, that I just so happened it was time for me to go on my FMLA leave. I mean, my parents died 3 months later. I really waited too long. And then that pissed me off because I was like, man, I've been sticking around prioritizing this place. I definitely don't want it to be that I left there that day upset, but it really, like, it was just everything came crashing down right in that moment where I was like, if we can't even take a stand on maintaining a level of safety for our students because we don't want to go up against a board member, I just don't get scared by things like that. Like, it's just my values are way more important than maintaining a job. And anybody who doesn't want somebody like me, then I'm not fit for their organization.
Stephen's unchecked behavior was facilitated by his protection from the board. Having direct connections to the top of an organization has serious negative consequences on workplace morale, culture, and unfortunately, in this case, the students. This highlights the significant repercussions of nepotism, which can ultimately erode the fabric of a workplace. Stephen's behavior caused havoc, leaving a trail of disruption in its wake. Chelsea had had enough. She knew she had come to a point where she needed to remove herself to save her sanity and be present for her parents. Taking time off through FMLA was the break she desperately needed.
So my parents' health really went downhill so much faster than I thought. My dad ended up going into hospice.
And so I had to leave work kind of abruptly. Things were getting dire. So it wasn't, nothing was coming as much of a shock anymore. While I was gone, there was an announcement made that Stephen found another job somewhere else and was going to be quitting. And so this happened while I was, you know, taking care of my dad, which, just to give a full understanding, when I got to be with my dad when he was put in hospice, I did not know that my mom was also in hospice in a separate facility. So my dad died a couple weeks later. I was with him when he passed, and my mom was also under hospice care in a facility, not really verbal or anything. And when I left, we knew that she did not have much time, but it was very inconclusive. She died 11 days later. So I left work with two living parents and came back to work in like a month or maybe a little bit more with two dead parents. But I came to a realization during that time, and it was like one of the last conversations that I had with my dad, because my dad loved to talk about work. Like that was the only thing he talked about. So like that was the thing that I talked about with him. And so he was with me through this whole process. And one of the last things I said to him was like, you know, I realized that we could get rid of Stephen, but the toxicity is already baked into this place because this happened. And so it doesn't matter anymore. I have to be done with this place. I have to be, because I'm miserable. I'm angry. Like, I don't think that I was considered to be somebody who came to work in a bad mood. Like, I always thought that it was really important to compartmentalize my moods for work, especially when you're working with children or, you know, and I would quite often get like that, are you okay? You know? And not just because I don't know, I was just pissed. You know, and I didn't want to be the kind of person who was like, if we aren't holding anybody to any expectations, then I'm not doing anything either. You know, like, and how can we strive as an organization if it's okay for no one to follow? You know, like, how can we thrive and, you know, how can we be successful?
After the worst of the storm had passed for Chelsea, she felt a sense of relief. When you're in the eye of a storm, you don't realize how much you're pushing to fight through until it's over. Coming back to work was protocol. Chelsea has a strong, loyal work ethic that was passed down to her from her parents. Quitting was not even a thought in her mind, despite the chaos and poor leadership of this organization.
At that point, I did go into therapy because I was so angry. Like, everything was tripping me off. It was like I was a bucket that was full and every drop splashed out. And I was becoming really concerned about my reputation because I was afraid that people would only extend grace to me for so long for the situation, because everybody felt bad for me. I mean, it wasn't like anybody was like, geez, what's her problem? You know, everybody felt bad. There's plenty of people whose, you know, parents had passed. There was nobody else went through what I went through. And so people could only just imagine. I came back and it was definitely better without him there. Although here's the kicker, his wife worked there too. And like, she was an even worse employee. She made him look like he was decent. So like, she was that bad. So like, we still had her to deal with. But because I have this baby boomer mentality, I'm like, well, you know, I guess I'm just like coming back. What else am I going to do? Am I going to have to like go rewrite my resume? Like, I don't want to do that. So that was going to be my life. You know, I was going to continue on in the organization and try to make the best of it. And then my husband got a job opportunity that was a really amazing job opportunity. I was gone within a few weeks after that. The summertime came and the building was cleared out. I had offered to my direct supervisor, you know, I was like, I don't have a job lined up. There are some of these tasks that I could probably do if you guys just wanted to like give me a stipend or something, which is so fucking dumb because like, why? It's like, just get out. Just get out. But then I heard from somebody that Stacy was like, well, why would we have her back? She didn't even do anything those last few days that she was with us when there was nobody in the building. And I was like, are you kidding me? I made the mistake of leaving there and immediately applying to another position in the area that I was moving to. And I did interview for it and had a great interview. I really thought I was going to get the job. And then at the last minute, like I didn't hear from him. And I did not get the job. And my immediate supervisor and my partner both think that Stacy sabotaged it, called up the other school. And now I will say, though, that if that did happen, I would have to say thank you, because I should not have tried to get myself into a brand new job. Like, that was the wrong move for me. Like, I didn't need to do that. I was just so excited about everything that was going on. I was like, oh my God, I'm turning over my entire life. My life today, I didn't even know my life was going to be like this a year ago for so many reasons. If she did sabotage, thank you.
Sometimes you just have to let things take their course and let the pieces fall into place as they will. For Chelsea, this meant taking a break from her career and being home to support her family. She has a new lease on life and new aspirations for the future of her career.
I don't know if I'm a homemaker or a stay-at-home mom. I looked at both of those and I don't seem to fit the description of either one, but I drop my kids off at school every day and can be there to pick them up. I still use my background to go and volunteer in the schools. I've been in both my children's classrooms. And so for the first 6 months, I was like, just like living this kind of like weird retirement life. My partner kept on telling me, he was like, you know, that doesn't last forever. I know you're enjoying that, but like, you're going to get tired of it. So of course, about a month or two ago, I started going like, yeah, but what am I going to do next? I just enrolled in a program to get some new credentials and certifications so I can get myself back there out there. And I still think I'm going to be working with students in the same capacity that I had been, a little bit more therapeutic in approach. But like, I've also considered going into like consulting and helping people through toxic workplace scenarios too, like going that extra step, because I felt so crazy. And I would have so many people who would behind closed doors nod and agree with me and be like, preach, sister. And then when push comes to shove, I'm the one at the table looking crazy by myself. I was going through a lot. I cried I cried my way in tears over the last year or more. I had been trying to figure out a way to get out of there for probably the last 3 years. And that's the thing about toxic workplaces too. Like, since they're all really kind of a little bit toxic, you have to go like, well, how much can I take? Like, well, how much worse is it going to be? I don't even know how bad the other place is. It's very bittersweet to like look back and talk on this experience, because after being there for more than a decade, I have so many accomplishments that I owe back to that place. Like, I wouldn't have these accomplishments without it. I think every experience is a learning experience. I mean, I felt the same way back when I was dating, you know, like I never knew what I wanted in my, you know, next partner. But every time I had a failed relationship, I knew what I didn't want. And so it's the same thing in a workplace, you know, like, and now I know, because I have been on so many hiring committees, it is really impressive when you are sitting across the table from an applicant who is interviewing you too. Find out about the culture of your organization, ask those questions. And so being really smart after you've had a bad experience about where you get yourself back into, just stick with your values. And then you have to know when something's outside of your lane. You've spoken up, you've said your piece. And if it is not something that you're responsible for, you have to find a way to have some peace to let it go.
Chelsea went through some of the hardest moments of her life while simultaneously navigating through a toxic workplace. It's hard not to get caught in the middle of the drama, chaos, and confusion of it all. But it's important to look for ways that will keep you grounded. Stay true to your morals and values. Sometimes it takes a major life event to shake up our lives and help us see our situation through a new lens. Don't let a toxic workplace cloud your vision for what is best for you. You are in control of your dreams and aspirations. Don't lose sight of that. Next time on Toxic Workplace.
Now, I will say, like, I kind of took a step back and I kind of like started buying into that hype of like, you know what, maybe he's right. I haven't worked in this type of environment he has. Maybe I do need to focus more on like some of these short-term objectives and forget some. But like the more I got into it and the more we did that, like I started to see that we were unable to produce at the level that he was expecting because of all the roadblocks due to the lack of process. Like I'm trying to build the plane as we're flying it, and every time like I had have like something that was really positive, he just showed very little interest and would just not care about it. And I actually approached the chief people officer. I don't think he expected this. And I was like, hey, I was told you're not happy with my work. And what do you think she said? I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never said that. She was like, do you want me to address this with him? And I was like, no, you know, maybe it was just miscommunication. And so you start seeing the manipulative type of games that start happening.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you have a story to share, please go to toxicworkplacepodcast.com, click on Be a Guest, and fill out the submission form. Your story will be completely anonymous. All names are changed to protect the employer and the employee. And if you like this podcast, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.